Hello, you're listening to Therapy Insiders. Thanks for tuning in. How are you? Let me know. Tweet at me, at Therapy Insiders. Be kind of weird if you told me while listening to your iPhone or wherever you listen to iPads on. That'd be kind of strange. So this upcoming interview with Chris Johnson, let me set it up real quick. Chris, if you haven't been following him, he is really big in the running world. Chris is also a physical therapist. Chris puts out a ton of videos, a lot of them silent videos. So we definitely wanted to talk to him about running in general and opening up a business because he has a business and just stuff about the new year. And then we had a little fun with him because he's a Pittsburgh fan and I'm a big Ravens fan because I'm from Maryland. So we kind of went back and forth. I think it was pretty funny, but we covered a lot of our kind of go-tos in running, including misconceptions and how integrating different thought processes and perspectives really is beneficial for the overall outcomes, particularly in runners. So hope you find it useful and enjoyable. We would also like to remind everyone that we are sponsoring PT Pub Night at CSM in February. So sign up for that. RSVP, it's free. Just come hang out with us. So looking forward to California and CSM and definitely hanging out with some of our friends. All right, let's get to our sponsors and then on to Therapy Insiders.
Therapy Insiders is proudly sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. But aside from being the ultimate EMR for physical therapy and the rehab community, WebPT also produces incredible content in a wide variety of topics. One such content piece I was really curious about was feedback. So I asked Heidi Janenga about that. Stick around to the middle of the episode to find out what she had to say about professional feedback. Therapy Insiders is also sponsored by Patient Sites, the leader in physical therapy, website, newsletter, and Facebook marketing.
In the middle of this episode, I asked Scott, the president of Patient Sites, about data, because data, if you haven't heard, is going to be critical for integrating and growing your business. So Scott from Patient Sites will give us a little bit of insight of how to really harness that data. And now, on to Therapy Insiders. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders, part of the UpDoc Media family. And at this point, we're several weeks into 2016, and 2016 or any new year always brings about resolutions. And me personally, I'm not a big fan of resolutions. I think they're temporary and they don't last very long. I think they're band-aids for what people really want. But Urson Joe, New Year's are always still a fun time to kind of want to get better, right? I mean, you guys, we talk about this all the time, do a lot of cool stuff, and there's a lot of ways to get better, and we talk about business a lot. But there's something else that's near and dear to both of your hearts, and Urson, Joe, with Casey, I'm talking about running. Have you guys been putting in any miles lately?
Honestly, Gene, no. I'm a fair weather runner. It's cold out here.
It is cold. What about you, Urson?
I also do not run outdoors in the winter. I stick to the treadmill. I am not very tolerant of the cold. And even though we've actually had really mild winter just until the past couple of days here in sunny Buffalo, New York, my knee is still bugging me. And it's been one of the things that next time I actually see someone and I bring a camera, one of the videos I want to film for Modern Manual is actually me getting evaluated and treated. So, I mean, it's a strange thing. You know, I've told you before, like it doesn't actually hurt if I have it taped, but it is getting a bit worse.
Surprised so, you haven't yeah, had I haven't a been running. Cortisone injection in it yet based on your previous
I
history.
Know. Right.
You know what a real runner would do? They run more miles, Urson. They just run it.
That's right.
Well, maybe. In,
And running that's is actually good for the knees. Running
yeah, that's the actually knees. Been shown. Yeah,
a couple studies now. That rude guest who just interrupted you, you probably don't recognize his voice because you wouldn't know it from his videos, but our guest tonight, Chris Johnson, he can talk. You might know him as the marching guy. You might know him as the guy who marches. Let's see, wait, is there anything else he does? He's marching, and I think he's also very well published in his shoulder, which no one knows him from. Yeah, he also he beat Heinz Ward in a triathlon, and his dad was so disappointed because Chris is from Pittsburgh.
Oh, no. Well, it's been a fun podcast. Thanks for joining us, Chris, and we'll see you on YouTube with your silent videos.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, actually, the Bills just got a bunch of Permane Brothers sandwiches sent to them because they lost and allowed Pittsburgh to get into the playoffs.
Let's keep this podcast positive and not speak of Pittsburgh or the Steelers or any variation of that. So we'll focus on Chris. Chris, thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah, of course. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me to do this. I didn't realize I was going to have the good fortune to get all three of you. So this is great, and I want to congratulate you guys on UpDoc. It's pretty cool. I'm learning more about it the more you guys post and share stuff online. So congratulations on that front, and Happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to ask you, Chris. I mean, you're known as a PT who treats triathletes and starters, runners. You do a lot of running-related videos and seminars. You have a running ebook. But your running story. I remember you telling me a while back, a couple years ago, that you actually gave up running for a while, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of what. Yeah, this is taking me down this path, but you're right. Running for me when I was younger was always a means of survival. I used to have a brother that used to be around and roughhouse with me, and so that was really my primary means to escape from him. So
sounds like paleo running.
Yeah, maybe. So and I always relied on my speed. Whether I was playing, it's funny, people think that all I do is race triathlon, and I actually started a little league baseball pitcher, and my goal was never to do anything else in life. I'm sure a lot of kids have that that dream, but I was left-handed. I was on 72 miles per hour when I was 12 years old and got into trouble with my shoulder, and then was playing soccer, basketball, tennis, pretty much everything. But it was running was a common denominator that I think positioned me to have success in these different sports. I got to a point where I was playing tennis when I was in college, and I stopped abruptly during my senior year when I was in the middle of a match, and actually evolved or pulled apart the inferior pull of patella, and that I thought that was it. I thought I was done for the rest of my life, and I had sought medical consultation, and they sort of painted a sort of bleak picture in terms of my future as a distance runner. Not that I was doing a lot. Distance running at the time, but it was a lot of what defined me as an athlete, and to have that taken away would have obviously been terrible. So unfortunately I was already in PT school, early decision at Delaware, and it sort of put me on a path. But to be honest with you, I didn't really learn running, really appreciate it as a skill, until I would say my early 30s. And I used to just sort of rely on the fact that perhaps I had some ability as a runner, and I would sort of play on that when I worked with patients, but or clients. But when I would try and get them back to running, they would always blow up. And I'm thinking, man, I thought I had a good handle on this. And I just went and started delving into the literature and really started taking a closer look at the performance demands of running. And here we are today.
So when did you start a second career as a mime? When did that come about?
Well, I shoot all these videos, and I'm just playing around. I mean, we had recess when we were in elementary school, right? And we stopped doing that as adults. And I thought I would be, you know, 37 years old right now. I thought I would be 37, working a desk job, you know, starting to gray. Instead, I go bald. But I do the videos, and I'm just taking a look at my own movement and just sort of having fun. And I started recording them, and I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. And I started sharing them with the online community and started getting some positive feedback. I don't incorporate a lot of verbiage into them because I want other people to use them as a resource and plug their own verbiage in it. There is much more of a framework than I lead people on to believe in terms of, you know, if I'm taking someone who perhaps is dealing with an injury from the time they come to see me back to running. So they are a little bit scrambled, and I guess that's just, you know, the way my life is, but I'm in the process of pulling all this stuff together into a running certification, through NextGen. They've been kind enough to give me a platform to do that, and I think it's going to be pretty well received. And yeah, there's a lot of verbiage and reasons why I'm doing things, as well as cueing and things of that nature. So, but yeah, I guess I am a good mime.
You know, Chris, I really think that that is probably one of the hardest things to do, is give the right cues when you're trying to return somebody to a running activity. So, and I think that your silent videos and seeing you do the motions is probably, you know, some of the best cueing that you can do. Do you have any cues that you use a lot when you're trying to return somebody to running that you feel might benefit some of our listeners?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on what exercise we're talking about, or if we're going to just jump right into running. I mean, I think the first thing we have to appreciate is that, you know, there's a lot of viable solutions to tackling running. And, you know, I think we have to sort of take people on a case-by-case basis. With the drills, when I introduce these drills, I want people to just screw around with them. I don't actually do any cueing. You know, sometimes I'll go upstairs and get a cup of coffee and just say, I'll be back. And that way I want people to just sort of, you know, reveling in what it is I'm asking them to do. And I may start giving them a couple simple cues. So, you know, with the marching drills, for example, you know, I know that a lot of people end up watching those, and I do a lot of variations. There's so much in the literature about reducing stride length or really increasing step rate as a means to reduce stride length. So when you watch those marching drills, I'm telling a lot of the folks coming to see me to get as tall as they can, but when they're lowering the non-balancing leg, I want them to kiss the forefoot and then slowly contact the heel. And that cue in and of itself, and to do it like a ninja, so you actually don't hear anything, so it relies on or requires a lot of control, but it's also starting to force them to adopt a shorter stride, because they can easily, you know, reach out and initiate contact with their heel. Not that that's bad, but for the sake of that, I'm just trying to get them to shorten their stride length, or in that case, their step length. So I tell people, imagine if you were balancing a bucket of water or a book on your head. You know, running is all about head control. And we see people running. The strategy that we're seeing is their attempt to mitigate shock from ground contact up to their brain, mostly. All right. And I think people forget that. So, you know, at day's end, there's a lot of cues, and different ones resonate with different people. You know, I'll talk a lot about 90-degree angles and straight lines. You know, with the thigh-high position, imagine you are balancing a pint of water or a plate of food. You know, having the tibia, if it were, you know, vertical, or like if it were a plumb line, dropping straight down to the ground. So I'm going to start giving these descriptions. I'm rolling out all these videos into a Vimeo project, and it's also going to be part of this NextGen cert where I actually do delve in that, because that's what people get when they come to my courses. And it's not so much a sales pitch, but, you know, I'll always keep the silent videos free and accessible, and we'll expand on that library. But yeah, different cues work for different people. I think there's some good ones that work across the board.
Great. Thanks. Good stuff.
So when dealing with runners, I know that was, when I was treating, that was one of the largest population of patients that I treated. And it was awesome. I really loved runners because of that somewhat sense of craziness, but still a willingness to try, because, you know, similar to athletes, there's obviously a lot of intricacies to treating athletes, but the outcome with athletes or soldiers or that kind of population is the motivation for return to something that they're going to do, most likely whether they're in pain or not. And runners mm-hmm. are kind of in that mold as well. And I think one thing common to all runners that I saw was a ton of misconceptions about running based on their perceptions of their body or what their friends sure. told them or things like that. And, you know, that was the beginning of a lot of treatments, is clearing up those misconceptions. Do you have some common misconceptions that you usually hear that you kind of are anticipating or expecting that you deal with daily, weekly basis?
Oh, yeah. I think Sarogi Otto, their article in JOSPT, that they talked about runners' beliefs, and that's a must-read for anyone who's working with runners. And it broke it down into intrinsic and extrinsic risk factors. And there's some credence to, you know, a lot of the beliefs, but there are definitely some inaccuracies that runners were reporting, you know, talking about how perhaps foot pronation was the culprit, or, you know, other characteristics. So, you know, I think that the way that you address that is to first ask the person, and this is in a form that I put online, it's my running evaluation form, is what is your understanding of your situation and what landed you in my care, all right? And you have to start the conversation there, because to your point, you want to resolve these inaccuracies, because, you know, again, Scott Morrison talked about this. He wrote a post at one point, and it's not about having a perfect understanding. It's making sure that it's the least wrong. And, you know, I think that's where the literature comes in. It helps to just give us a more refined and accurate understanding. I think most people think heel striking's a big problem. I think, you know, footwear is obviously a topic that, you know, that enters the conversation along these lines. Foot type changes, you know, your glutes aren't firing. I think we could just rattle off a bunch of them that we're all hearing. But I think at day's end, it's understanding that people fail to treat running as a skill. And it is a skill. We go from walking to all of a sudden we can run, and then we get injured. And then that sort of puts us on the downward spiral. And then we enter the medical system, which is predominantly filled with, you know, practitioners who have little to no training on running. But you're never going to tell a runner that you don't work with runners, because that's a big population of people who are dealing with injury and or pain.
Speaking of pain, Urson, do you, when you treat runners, do you integrate pain sciences? Because to me, it seems like running is very patho-anatomical in terms of treatment and motion and stuff like that. How do you integrate pain sciences into running?
Well, I still, even though it, you know, I look at the biomechanics of running, and I look at what the studies show in terms of ground reaction force and ability to accept load, and the fact that a symmetrical gait may help you out, and et cetera, et cetera. I still always tell people, and actually I'm going to borrow a line from Chris, because I learned this at System of a Run. He just says that pain is all about sensitivity. And in the end, you know, someone may have pretty decent gait, decent symmetry, and they may have what looks to be like a good forefoot stride or a good midfoot stride, if you're into that. You know, but they may have pain. Their pain from the knee may have transferred to their calf, or and then you look at someone else who has like a pretty decent genu valgus, but they absolutely have no pain and they're winning races. So it would be hard to say that you need to modify something there. But in the end, when I see an asymmetry that seems to be correlated with something that's, you know, like a loss of major loss of ankle dorsiflexion, and they have pain in the knee on that side, I still try to tell them that, you know, you're not exactly shredding your tissues, you're not tearing up your knees. The degeneration that the ortho may have seen on an X-ray, actually, you know, your left knee probably has that as well, because it's not like your right knee is older than your left knee. So I still use all those same little kind of verbal stories and analogies disease and kind of, you know, ways to inoculate thought viruses that I do in all my patients. It's just that I kind of put it into a running framework. And in the end, I'm just saying, you know, by improving your mobility, by improving your symmetry, by improving your step sound or rate, that I'm just going to increase your ability to attenuate load and decrease the sensitivity in your knee, because it's not like you're tearing up your tissues, or you're not shredding your knee apart.
I think that's all brilliant stuff too. I think it's a way we phrase things, and this has always been sort of at the forefront of all of my my clinical work, and it's probably a function of my mentors. But I think people don't really appreciate the impact of the verbiage or, you know, words that they're using, and I'm glad that I'm the forefront of rehab. I think that's a common theme that's starting to emerge. It's also that's part of the art, and I think it's, again, it's just critical. And I think that's a common denominator among a lot of savvy clinicians who have been out treating for a while. It's their explanation of things, their use of metaphors, and I think that's all great stuff.
Speaking of great stuff, let's take a little break and hear the continuation of our sponsor ads from WebPT and PatientSights. Therapy Insiders is sponsored by WebPT, the ultimate EMR. Aside from being the ultimate EMR, like you said in the beginning of the episode, WebPT also produces a ton of content. And one of the topics that I wanted to know about was professional feedback, because it doesn't really get talked about, but it's super important. And I asked Heidi. So, Heidi, why is professional feedback important?
Well, Gene, professional feedback in particular helps us become better employees, managers, colleagues, and providers. It's mission critical when it comes to improving patient care and exceeding business objectives. So, during this month's webinar, the amazing Dr. Daphne Scott and I are going to define feedback, explore the reasons why people give and fail to give feedback, and present a model for giving and receiving feedback inside a PT practice, including actionable steps for creating a feedback-rich culture in your clinic. I hope everyone tunes in. You can register for free at webpt.com/feedback.
Thanks, Heidi. Remember, professional feedback helps you grow and helps your business grow. It's super important. So check it out, webpt.com/feedback. Therapy Insiders is also sponsored by PatientSights, the leader in website development, Facebook, and newsletter marketing. As I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, data is critical, and it's getting more and more important every day for the growth of your business. So who better to ask than Scott, the president of PatientSights, who deal with data and constant information all the time to better create websites and marketing campaigns. So let's hear what Scott had to say about the importance of data.
That's a great question. And it's only been about 100 years since John Wanamaker was the guy that first said, 50% of my advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half. The internet's changed everything in terms of the ability to measure things that are working, things that are not. So you can even look at applying tactics to phone calls so that you know how many phone calls you're getting from your website or from any Yellow Book advertising. You can use Google Analytics and Google Webmaster Tools to find out which pages people are gravitating to, which pages are underperforming in terms of how long people are spending on them before they leave your website. There's tools out there that you can use to research in terms of which keywords your competitors are outranking you on, and then look at how to measure your improvement on those keywords as you do content development. You can take any call to action that you have on your website, appointment request forms, inquiry forms, ebooks, anything that you want to put on there for people to respond to, and measure which elements are working the best, make some changes, and see what kind of results come about as part of those. So, ultimately, at the end of the day, you can measure everything online, and we encourage businesses to take an approach of continuous improvement in this area of their online marketing.
Continuous improvement. Is there any other way if you really want to be successful? I strongly encourage you to check out patientsights.com/insiders, where you can check out everything PatientSights has to offer, as well as 3 ebooks to learn more about such things as data. And now, let's get back to Therapy Insiders, where I'm about to offer Chris Johnson an opportunity to redeem himself. Chris, I want to give you an opportunity to redeem yourself being a Steelers fan here. So we started out on a little bit of a yellow sore note there. What would you say?
I'm yellow?
Yeah, black, yeah. Yeah, Urson's from Pittsburgh, too. You guys better not be letting him get off.
Well,
he's sort of like green, but we're going to say that's Pittsburgh.
He's a Bills fan, I feel sad for him.
I'm not a Bills fan. I did not. I mean, I know I live here. Sorry, Buffalo listeners. I'm not a Bills fan. It's hard to be a Bills fan. It's like
that's true. It's like being a Jets fan.
All my patients come in feeling worse on Monday, basically.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, your opportunity here. How important is the great toe for running?
Oh, I think that, again, if you look at, there's a research study that looked at the role of the great toe. There's a bunch of them, but, imagine if you didn't have a great toe. All right, so I challenge people to think of that. I saw this picture time, and it was very threatening to me. And it was a person who had their great toe amputated, and I was like, oh my god, it hurt to look at. So I think it's important. Now we can argue about the exact amount of degrees that one needs. I think if someone has Jay DeSherry threw out, I think the number around 35 or 40 in one of his manuscripts. I think that you need a certain amount of motion ballpark, but I think, the body will adapt, or you'll figure out a different strategy. If you don't have that motion, you may supinate a little more prematurely, but I think it's important, especially create stiffness along the plantar tissues as you wind that great toe in a dorsiflexion. So I will say, I see a lot of really fast, uber talented runners who have halt valgus and no issues, and they're just smoking fast. So I think it's important, but there's more to things than just the great toe. So
well, I'm sorry, Chris, the answer we were looking for is incredibly important. Thank you for playing, and this podcast is yet again over.
Yeah, I think it is important, but I think that people are a little bit too steadfast and exact. I think people have a lot of biases when it comes to the great toe. Now, you see my videos, and I put up my dexterity video. I have probably actively, if I'm just standing here doing great toe dorsiflexion, in 75 degrees. I know that I'm not going to be supinating prematurely, and I'm going to be able to create a certain amount of stiffness. It's probably going to help with propulsion, but that windlass mechanism—that's a passive deal. That's not something. I think that's misunderstood a lot of the time, and I think some people are better positioned to progress through the first ray than others, which could be dictated by hip architecture. It's just a complex piece you have to take on a case by case basis.
If you haven't seen Chris's toe dexterity video, he has more toe dexterity than will have in their hands. It's ridiculous, actually.
I have a few more videos that I'm going to share, just because I've been playing with basically great toe dorsiflexion on the left and vice versa on the right, and just working that. So I'll show it to you. But if you watch someone, I had a person I was working with tonight, and they had no great toe in terms of active dorsiflexion. I said, I want you to lift your great toe. A lot of people pick it up quick, so that's an easy thing for talking about runners, for them to practice day in and day out. But I'm around a bunch of high level cyclists, and they're always in these really sort of rigid cycling shoes that they're stiff, and they sort of cram your forefoot. And when I look at a lot of their feet, they're skinned on the top because they're hitting the roof of the shoebox. When I start getting them working on toe dexterity, they're amazed at how effective it is. Not only to get them more coordinated with that side, but also with just adding power to the equation, which is crazy. I mean, it's something I started paying a little bit more attention to with runners after I got in trouble from running on a cold day with my laces snugged up a little bit too tight and a shoe that was pinching my forefoot a little bit. It was like the perfect storm, and I got into a lot of trouble with my second MTP joint. So anyways, get your runners working on it.
I'd have to, I guess, practice it myself. It's one of those things that, I don't know, maybe I should practice on the side that of my knee, you know, currently involved side, but otherwise I'd have to, I don't want to be one of those guys like, hey, look at this video and do this. Do you do it? No.
Yeah.
One of those guys. Watch this video. Right. Just watch this video. Right. I know the guy. It's okay. I know the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, here's a picture of me and him together. So does that make it any more credible?
Typically, yes.
Got to establish credibility always. So, Chris, do you have a systemic approach to treating runners, or do you just kind of throw them on the treadmill and see what sticks out at you? Let's say somebody comes in and says, "I'm a runner, fix me." What do?
Like a series of courses, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing that, and this is critical, is you have to understand, are you dealing with a tissue injury, or are you dealing with someone who's in a sensitized state? And Greg Lehman talks about this a lot, and I think I love listening to any podcast he's doing, you know, any of his material, because it confirms a lot of my biases. And there are other people out there talking about this as well. I think that's a starting point, is, you know, make sure you sit down, coffee, you know, or just have a conversation with someone, because you have to get to know what that ecosystem is, and also appreciate that when a runner is dealing with an injury or they're dealing with pain, that they're going to be going through an identity crisis. So you have to really discuss, you know, other aspects of their life, because I think that's often overlooked among medical and rehab professionals. When they're working with runners, and that's why they say all runners are crazy. They're not crazy. I mean, this may be an outlet for them. It may be, you know, spending time with their social group if they're part of a track club. If you take that away, you know, it sort of diminishes their quality of life. So challenge them to, you know, expand as a person, but also appreciate that they're going to be probably going through an identity crisis during that time. So rarely do I shut people down, unless, you know, if someone has a calf strain, I'm going to be like, look, it's not in your best interest to be running right now. Most of the time, though, if someone's like, oh, yeah, well, I didn't roll my ankle, or I didn't, you know, have this one particular occasion where I, like, had this sharp pain in my calf, like I felt something tear. Most of the time, there wasn't one specific incident, and I think that you should start to think about the fact, what else is going on in this person's life, you know? Or maybe we will put them on the treadmill. Maybe they're a candidate at that point to watch what they're doing. Where I see a lot of folks going wrong is just they get out of the gates wrong, and then the rest of their treatment program is sort of flawed, or they just start basically chasing their tail. So, but yeah, I mean, I think with whether it's tennis, whether it's soccer, whether it's running, you have to look at, what are the documented performance demands of this activity? And this is sort of, I try to build comprehensive capacity through strength training, which is going to elicit neuromuscular adaptations, lend itself to improved economy, get people through their day without getting injured through activities of daily living. But what's running and bounding from one leg to the next? So, I think just really stripping it down to its components. Parts and saying, how well does this person do X, Y, Z, so on and so forth. And that's what I try and talk a lot about on these podcasts. That's what I try to highlight in a lot of the videos. It's like my first goal with a runner is to get them upright into single leg stance. You know, and then from there, we can start progressing. So, and that's why I put such an emphasis on a lot of the marching drills. So it's unilateral load, because you're never in contact with both feet at the same time. So does that help to answer that question?
It does. I'm still hung up on your lack of excitement about the great toe, but I'm working past it.
Yeah, well, look, I'm very excited about the great toe. you know, there's nothing I am more passionate about in life than the great toe.
Oh, don't lie to me, Chris.
No, I'm just, yeah.
Tomorrow, Chris is going to write a blog post. Great toe, not so great.
Yeah, I've written a bit about, you know, my Chris Johnson PT site has been hacked probably like 5 times, so which has been a blast. I'm trying to do the same PT
thing. It's been
G'd. Yeah, pretty much.
Just trying to watch that great toe video that you got on there.
Yeah, you should still be able to access all that through YouTube.
I can either confirm nor deny that.
Yeah. So
how about we finish out, Chris, with you telling us a little bit about, you just started a new practice, right?
I did. Yeah, it's really exciting. I got connected with, formerly it was known as Harriet Sports Performance. So Todd Harriet and David Richter, they're two retired pro cyclists, both fierce athletes. Todd won the Tour of Cuba at one point, but he was on the Colombia team, and David was a captain of the Subway team. He was also drafted by the Phillies out of high school, gifted athlete. And I got tangled up with these jokers when I moved out here. Jokers, and you know, I mean that in the best of ways, but and they just embraced me. And I think that there is a performance code to a lot of the stuff that we talk about. We are similar points in our careers, sort of like master's level athletes. And we actually just moved into this state-of-the-art facility in the heart of Capitol Hill, where Sir Mix-a-Lot used to talk about his posse being on Broadway. We're like right off Broadway. And I'm really fortunate.
Wait. I'm sorry. Did you say Sir Mix-a-Lot?
He's from Seattle?
Yeah. Don't you guys, I need to get you up to snuff on your pop culture. You were too concerned about some of his other more promiscuous videos, I bet.
He was on Broadway?
I guess I just never noticed.
Yeah, he used to always talk about his posse being on Broadway. So that was Capitol Hill, Seattle. So that's where we are. But anyone who's ever visiting Seattle or wants to make a trip out here, it's such a cool space. I want to say it's a 12,000 square foot space. There's a cafe. We do performance testing. There's literally everything under one roof. So I never need to leave this place. I'll treat folks. I just have a small room carved out downstairs because I'm not trying to run, you know, some monstrosity of a facility. Most of my sessions are hour one-on-one. And and I'm doing a lot of traveling teaching. So I'm part of this. It's a culture or ecosystem here. And it's just awesome. You never know who's going to come in. Today I had a chance to, you guys know who Fabian Cancellara is, the cyclist, world-class cyclist.
Negative.
Should we?
Does anybody know cyclists except for cyclists?
Yeah. Well, Cancellara is he's a big deal. So anyways, got a chance to spend some time with one of my teammates who's fully sponsored by Trek today. And, it's just amazing to witness all these guys go through testing, get a window into their training programs, the lifestyle. It's fun. And I'm really lucky to be here.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see the space.
I know. So when you're out here, definitely we'll be shooting some videos. So all the videos that I'm shooting now, you know, the like, crazy industrial background, that's on the main floor of the space. So, but yeah, it's cool. Check it out. Metier, Metier, and it's a French term for lifestyle, if you will. It's a cool venture, and I plan to be here for a while, unless I get kicked out or violate some terms of my agreement.
Awesome.
Of your own agreement.
The agreement I have with them. So, it's cool.
Like speaking in the videos. Awesome. If you speak in any of the videos, you're right. Out of here. You're done.
Yeah. Well, I will start speaking. You know, it's always a little bit crazy here. There's just a lot of commotion. There's music playing. That's the other reason why. I mean, I can do voiceovers, but, you know, I try to keep the video short and sweet. I'm not trying to take up too much time from people, and I think if they see 20 to 30 seconds, they're in, you know, and it's just, it's not going to really get you bogged down. And that's part of the other reason. I just noticed my bandwidth, it continues to get shorter and shorter. So, and they're sort of like vignettes in that regard.
Yeah. But, you tell me that though. I mean, you know, when you were still filming like 1 minute videos, I was filming 5 to 7 minute videos, and you know, I just thought, man, I don't even want to watch my own videos. Like, it's just a pain to edit. So
yeah, it is. It is. And yeah, but it's funny. I'm lucky to have everyone supporting me online. It's, you know, it's really the viewers that make all this stuff possible. It keeps me really motivated when people are like, oh, I started doing these exercises. It's amazing how effective they are. I'm like, awesome. You know, I'm like, I'm going to freak out. You know, my wife is like, you can't post 10 videos in the same day. Like, it's going to freak people out. I'm like, well, no, this is what I enjoy doing, hon. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I would just say you should space it out just so you don't have to do as much, you know. When that baby comes.
Oh, I know. Don't tell me. I just shot over the last probably 7 to 10 days, like 350 videos.
Holy crap. Well, I guess it's only like 30 seconds to a minute each. Yeah.
Working off nervous energy about the baby?
No, I just can't sit still. So, and when I have a space like this, I just keep a digital camera. But I keep sucking up all the storage on my computer. It's like a battle between, and I pull everything off my external hard drive, but these videos take up a lot of space. So
they sure do.
Yeah, they do.
But, when's the baby coming? A couple weeks, right?
Yeah, really, probably anytime in the next week or two. So my wife's doing great. She's spinning every day. Spinning, you know, not spinning. So we're really excited. I'm gonna get, you know, this baby girl on a bike and swimming as soon as I can, just because I think it's good for athletic development, not because I'm gonna try and groom her to be, you know, some powerhouse in terms of an endurance athlete.
We believe you.
Athleticism.
Yeah absolutely.
That's exactly. I got my 6 and 8 year old running 5Ks with me this summer, and they placed almost every race they ran because there's no one else running at that time. So it was pretty awesome for them.
Yeah.
I see all this stuff. I think it's great.
My 3.5 year old had a little thin baseball bat that he's been swinging since 1 year old. And just because I want him to have good hand eye coordination, not because I want him to be a prodigy or anything like that.
Right. Well, you know, we all want our kids to be prodigies. They are all prodigies to us, but you know, the more athletic the parent, the more, we tend to push our kids, I guess, but I mean, in a good way. I think I'm not a crazy gymnastics dad.
Yeah, and I think that's good. I mean, I think Ursa, in your case, you could probably have them chase chickens. You know, it worked for Rocky. You know, and you but
now that is some good agility training. I've had to do it myself.
The question is, do you have enough chickens for the kids to chase, or is like one of them going to have to like sub in and sub out? Because
you know what? Yeah. We originally bought 4 chickens and I got a 5th one on the way. So I guess I got to get another chicken. We're allowed to have 6.
Okay. Well, that's going to probably be the cap on, you know, the number of kids you have. I don't know. Right. I won't put it past you.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I just keep on saying, I'll just take whatever God gives me.
Yeah.
I have a bigger vehicle now. So
yeah. Yeah. No, good.
Everything changes.
Yeah,
I know it's going to be interesting, but it poses a separate challenge. And everyone they're asking me, oh, how are you going to do all this triathlon when, you know, in these videos and everything when the baby comes into the world? You know, it's a different set of challenges. I mean, you embrace it and you adapt and overcome. It's probably going to be a blessing in disguise because I probably train too much anyway. So. You know, Erson seeing the chaos, he was staying with me.
Right, yeah. I went to go work out for 45 minutes, and Chris was basically editing videos or doing emails and training people. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to go work out. And, you know, and like, whenever I'm done, we'll go visit Ryan DeBell. And it was like 2 hours later, he comes out of his garage. I'm like sleeping.
Well, I'll start probably being a lot more productive with the other stuff, and people are, you know, like all you guys. I mean, you're very prolific with everything, so it's. I don't think folks understand how much of a hustle it is, and I know Gene, you spent some time with Gary Vaynerchuk, and that's his message. It's you hustle your tail off. There's no, you know, just gifts given to you. You know, you have to just keep busting your you know what day in and day out, and stay hungry and stay passionate and surround yourself with good people, and you're going to have ups and downs, but you know, at day's end, I think that's one of the common threads that I see, whether it's with you guys or with other people that are very successful. And as the saying goes, you can have whatever you want in life, pay for it. You know, everything comes at an expense, so just make sure you're happy with what you're doing.
Yeah, it's perseverance.
There you have it.
It always comes down to perseverance. We had John Childs on the podcast a few weeks ago, and we talked about the formation, how EIM came about, and he said that, you know, that there's, they experienced what pretty much every eventually successful business experiences is a moment of crisis that will go in any one direction. You're either going to persevere through it by working through and just kind of rolling up your sleeves and going, you know, this is not good. How do we fix it? Or you just do the easy thing and fold up. And so that it was cool to hear that even, you know, EIM, a company that's growing and fairly successful at this point, you know, obviously depending on what success is to a lot of people, but they're a good growing company, and to hear what they went through to become what they are, it's always cool to hear. And it's a very similar story, like you said. It's, you just kind of have to grind through the difficult parts because there's no other way around it.
Yeah, and I think that's that ties so much into triathlon too, you know, not to get too philosophical here, but, you know, over the course of a long distance race, a half Ironman or a full, you know, you sort of go through these things and you have to troubleshoot. It's like my last race, my handlebar came loose, my aero bar, and it was like, I could have sat there and whined about it and probably ended up losing the race, but you just stay head down, keep going. And, you know, provide that, you know, your safety is not in jeopardy. So yeah, it's. I think it's good for people to hear that message. You know, anything that's easy in life probably isn't worth pursuing.
Amen to that.
It's. We get asked questions. I'm sure you guys all get asked this. Basically, people email you or they pull you aside on a seminar, and what they really want to know is, how do I get to be you?
Yeah, that's funny. You always say that. Yeah.
Right, and it's kind of like, I wasn't born into this, or I wasn't given all this. Like, I, you know, I worked at this, I'm constantly working at it, and I'm continuously perfecting the craft and learning from my failures. And there's lots of bumps along the road, absolutely, and it's definitely a lot of ups and downs. But persistence and perseverance, absolutely.
I like it. Well, on that note, I think that's a somewhat positive note of motivation to finish out on. Chris, thanks so much for joining us, even though you're a Steelers fan and are very much against the big toe, apparently. Well, we won't hold that against you. But
I'll show you your new symbol. Right,
yeah. Just get a like T-shirt a with a big like toe slash. And a line through it.
A line through, yeah.
No, but all joking aside, it's I've really enjoyed your videos. Every time you post one, I always check it out, and it's cool to see that just the little progressions. Like, I saw your side plank progression video, which was really cool. I really like that. And just sometimes we lose how effective simplicity is, and effective simplicity. And I think some of your videos are just very effective in that regard. So if our listeners again want to find your videos, where can they find them or any of your stuff?
If you just type in Chris Johnson PT in YouTube, it'll take you right to my page. And it, literally, if there's any exercise, you know, it may be in different, it may be a different descriptor, but just type in the name of the exercise, my name, and you'll probably see something along those lines. So, you know, I really preach a lot of variability. So I'll show people a baseline exercise, like say the lateral toe taps, and then we'll talk about lateral toe taps on the toes. And then maybe crossbody toe taps. I think if anyone's watched the movie Groundhog Day, you know, we do the same darn things day in and day out, and then we start getting pushback, and we just need to mix it up or incorporate some variability a lot of the times, and that can go a long way. It's like if people are having issues going up and downstairs, well, I typically will try to show people 3 to 5 different ways to go up and downstairs. I'm like, oh, I never thought of that. I'm like, well, now you will. So. But yeah, Chris Johnson PT YouTube, and if you could check out like my Facebook page. It's ZerenPT, ZerenPT.com. I'll give my mother credit for that name. She came up with it. It's a Mongolian gazelle that runs fast, swims well, and jumps high. So I thought it was an apt name for my operation. So
I think the only Mongolian thing I know is Mongolian beef. I don't even know if that's a real thing.
Yeah, that's from Pittsburgh.
Well, on that note,
are you guys in the Maryland area? Is that correct?
They call Pittsburgh New Mongolia.
Yes,
I can think of a few other things to call Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's changing a lot. I think it's going to pave the way for a lot of the other cities that were in the Rust Belt. So, you know, Cincinnati, Detroit, a couple other cities that would fall under that mix. But yeah, it's changing. It's there's some good things going on there. But yeah, Steeler Nation domination. I am excited for their super, you know, the playoffs. So I would not want to face them. They're just such an explosive team. When Ben Roethlisberger has to show up. I mean, he's been their team is just so different from it. You know, past years, it's sort of a running gun.
Sorry, I didn't hear any of that. I had to take my headphones off because my ears were bleeding. What were you saying? Something about Pittsburgh and it's a city. I don't know. But check out Chris at ZerenPT. The Pittsburgh Steelers are definitely the mirror image of the Ravens. And back in the day when Hines Ward was playing and Ray Lewis was playing, I mean, those were the games that we loved to hate or hated to love. I mean, it was just, that was football. It was just brutal. You know, somebody's going to get knocked out. And I definitely miss that. I miss those players because not a lot of that is still left. Obviously, the Ravens didn't have the greatest season this year, but it's cool. It's cool to see the tradition and the rivalries in sports. And that's definitely one of the best ones. The dislike for Pittsburgh definitely stems from that. I know it's a pretty cool city and it's coming through a growth, like you said, similar to how Baltimore was for the longest time, because there's a lot of parts of Baltimore that are kind of blue collar as well. So it's a very, very similar city in that regard. But I think Joe Brents is in Pittsburgh as well, right? Shout out.
Yeah, I finally had a chance to meet him. He's a great guy, and he and the Next Gen folks are up to great stuff. I taught with Francois Przinski, who's he's a character, brilliant thinker and clinician, and so I did that in December, so that was fun. So